If you're enjoying this podcast, please consider leaving a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It really helps me out a lot. Cheers.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When we think about world building in a fantasy novel, we are often asking, how can we create cool magic systems? How can we create these interesting landscapes? But there's another aspect to world building in fantasy novels that I think gets overlooked a lot, and that is cities. So in today's episode, we're going to focus on how you can create amazing cities in a fantasy novel. And if you're not writing fantasy, you will still learn a lot from this because cities tend to turn up in a lot of fiction. So stick around as we analyze The Gutter Prayer by Gareth Hanrahan. Hello and welcome to the Novel Analyst Podcast. My name is Jed Hearn, author of the upcoming fantasy novella, Fires of the Dead. And today's episode is titled The Gutter Prayer by Gareth Hanrahan. World building for fantasy cities. So The Gutter Prayer is about three young thieves caught in an ancient magical war between gods, monsters, ghouls, wormmen, tallowmen, and magicians. It's set in Girden, a city deep with secrets, sorcery, and subterfuge. Like I said in the introduction, a lot of fantasy books tend to occur in country-based settings, so it was a joy to read such a well-developed city. As someone who went to university to study architecture, I am a sucker for stories with well-thought-out cityscapes. So in this episode, I'm going to be analysing this book, The Gutter Prayer. So if you haven't read it and you don't want it spoiled, now is the time to stop. Go read that book, come back to this later. So there's a couple of world-building lessons that I extracted from this novel. I'm going to give you the list of them, and then I'll dive into each item in more detail. Number one, consider the first scene as a microcosm. Number two, ask yourself how the first scene sets the tone of your story. Number three, explore what you are interested in. Number four, consider how do different characters react to the same world. Number five, more ideas is better than not having enough. Number six, layer it up. Number seven, consider the city as a character. And then number eight, it's all about the intertwining. So these are the eight biggest world-building lessons that I took from The Gutter Prayer. We're going to dive into the first one in detail now. So number one, the first scene as a microcosm. What's effective about the beginning of The Gutter Prayer is that it establishes everything the story is about. So it's got thieves trying to pull off this difficult mission where they're breaking into this kind of government building that's heavily fortified to steal a thing. Then there's monstrous creatures in service of a powerful authority trying to stop them. There's also these unexpected moments of kindness, such as when the main character pulls a enemy soldier away from a burning room, even though it leads to her getting captured. There's twists and deep insights into character and magic. So in this opening scene, we're given clues. Clues as to what to expect from this story. Now, this does not mean by any means that you have to give away your entire story in chapter one. Not saying that at all. But it does mean you should consider thinking about what it is that makes your story great. What is it that makes your story interesting? Then capture as much of that emotional experience as you can early on. So, in practical terms, if you've got a lot of twists, have a really good twist early. If you've got a lot of character development and heart, have something to foreshadow that early on. First impressions are crucial. Number two, the first scene sets the tone. very similar to my first point, but crucially different in a important way. So, as you may have noticed by my description, the Gutter Prayer has highly unusual world building. You know, there's all sorts of strange creatures and monsters in it that I have never encountered anywhere else, which is a testament to the author's imagination. Now, the nature of this book is that you don't really understand a lot of the world at the start. You're sort of just thrown in the deep end, which I kind of like as a reader. However, the author had to figure out a way to make readers quickly realize that Gurdon, where this story is set, wasn't any old stereotypical fantasy town, and that this book wasn't a stereotypical fantasy book. So he did something quite interesting. See, the prologue, the very beginning of the novel, is narrated in second person present tense. And to give you an idea of what that sounds like, here is the first line from the book. Quote, "You stand on a rocky outcrop, riddled with tunnels like the other hills, and look over Gurdon." End quote. So this is a really unusual point of view, because most books are told in either first person or third person point of view. First person being, I did this, I did that. Third person being, Ben did this, Ben did that. But the author chose second person, just for this opening prologue. The rest of the book is in third person, more conventional. So, second person is where the author is referring to this kind of you, and it's sort of immersing you in the story, because they're saying, you're doing this, you're doing that. It's an interesting technique that can get a little bit gimmicky, but in this case, it was executed very well. So this unusual point of view immediately establishes what? Okay, so it establishes that this is going to be an unconventional story. Unusual point of view, probably going to be an unusual story. Now, it's so important to do this early if this is the same case with your book. If you wait until it's too late, readers will possibly lose their suspension of disbelief when you come out with all the cool, unusual parts of your world. Because chances are that readers are going to be entering into a fantasy book with very clear genre expectations. And I should clarify, I'm not saying you have to tell your story in second person point of view. I'm just saying you need to consider ways that you can structurally or technically hint to readers about what they're going to expect. Another bonus thing that this introduction does is that it focuses our attention on the city of Gurdon, hinting at its importance. And lastly, like any good opening, it asks more questions than it answers. I think asking more questions than it answers is really the highest function of world building, at least in the first, say, third to half of your novel. I think this is the time when you should just be expanding and dripping out more questions and more clues to readers and making them constantly interested in figuring out what it's all about. Number three, explore what you are interested in. There's a review of The Gutter Prayer on Goodreads that really sums up a lot of the positive sentiments I have towards this book. And the review comes from a reviewer called Patrick, and it goes like this. Quote, "If you're experiencing fantasy fatigue because you feel like most books in the genre are starting to feel too familiar, this book shall be your ambrosia. It was perpetually earth-shattering, and it provided a healthy injection of escapist euphoria." End quote. First of all, that's an amazing review. I would love to get something like that for my books. But secondly, really sums up a lot of my feelings towards this novel. And it kind of points out that The Gutter Prayer is a book where the author wasn't afraid to be weird, to craft these bizarre scenes, these eldritch horrors, these strange creatures. Do the same. Don't worry if you think your world is crazy or wacky or strange or unusual. Now, I should clarify that I'm not here to take a dump on faux Middle Ages, Europe, medieval fantasy book style settings. For example, Joe Abercrombie is one of my favorite authors, and his novels really benefit from being in this kind of highly familiar medieval fantasy setting. And the reason why that is the case is because it allows his characters to get the full focus. However, There are times when I really crave stories with unique settings and interesting world building. And my message for you, as a writer, is to be brave. Because if something's interesting to you, even if it seems a little bit wacky, it will probably be interesting to some readers. So embrace it. Number 4. Consider how different characters react to the same world. Just going to take a quick sip of water. And we're back. So there are 3 distinct point of view characters in The Gutter Prayer. The first one is Carillion, or Carrie for short, who is a thief cursed with an affliction where she basically gets possessed by these old dark gods. And in return, she sort of gets some powers where on the toiling of the bells, every hour, she can kind of see all throughout the city of Gurdon and learn all sorts of cool things. But despite this power, she still is lacking in a lot of other ways. And it's not like it's just going to give her this magic ability to smite all her enemies, which is something I really appreciate. I appreciate magic systems that in some ways are almost more of a liability than an asset. So the second character is Rat, who is this ghoul, this creature who most of his kind live underground in the subterranean underworld of Gurdon, but he sort of tries to live on the surface, even though his instincts are drawing him to become more feral, more of this kind of underworldly creature. And then the third main character is Spar, who is an ordinary person cursed with this disease that makes him a stone man, where basically his flesh is slowly petrifying and turning to stone. And there's kind of some good allusions to lepers, people who are afflicted with a disease that is contagious. Everyone else doesn't really want to touch them and they want to send them away. And he has a very interesting arc. And in many ways, he's probably the character who I enjoyed the most out of these 3. But my point with bringing up these 3 main characters is to consider this very crucial idea, which is that when you have diverse characters, when you have a diverse cast of people interacting with your story world, that's amazing because you get to explore more places and ideas than is possible with one. So for instance, Spar is kind of very involved with like the gangs of Gurdon. So he has that sort of lens through which to view the city. Carillion is an outsider in many ways. She's explored the world, she's a thief, and that gives her a very unique perspective on the city because she can kind of compare it to other things that she's seen. And then Rat, as a ghoul, has kind of this function of serving as our guide to the subterranean underworld of Gurdon. And just like, you know, all great cities throughout history, like London with its underground or Rome with its catacombs, Gurdon has quite an interesting amount of life and activity and crime going on underneath it. Not necessarily suggesting that's what's happening in London or Rome. I realize that's how it sounded then. But it definitely kind of reflects how there are some great historical cities where the layers of history don't just end on the surface, but they extend underground and there's all sorts of cool things that go on down there. So the key point with this is that you should consider if you need different characters in your story to be interacting with the world in different ways. And this is a big advantage of having a large cast, of having characters who come from a lot of different places, who are maybe different races, different types of people, basically just being a diverse cast to give you different viewpoints on the same information, on the same world. Number 5, more ideas are better than not having enough ideas. So I think I first encountered this notion from Brandon Sanderson, who is another really great fantasy author. And he mentioned that it's so much better to have a novel brimming with too many ideas than one not packed with enough. And I think that's pretty self-explanatory, because if you don't have it packed with enough, you're going to be stretching to fill the word count you want. And that's just not a good feeling. But if you have so many ideas, then readers are just wanting more. They're left wanting more because you can't pack them all fully into this book. So in The Gutter Prayer, here is a small selection of the amazing world-building ideas that are crammed into this one fantastic novel. So you have the Tallowmen, who are these wax creatures who are basically created by melting down people and then they are reformed into a wax version of themselves that is mindless and basically just serves the alchemists who created them. And they're pretty terrifying. They're really fast. They heal. They are powered by this sort of candle that sticks out of their head. And they're just very interesting. A very interesting take on law enforcement in a fantasy city. You have the crawling ones, who are collections of thousands of worms who eat the souls of the dead to basically steal their knowledge. And then all of these worms form into this human-shaped being, but really it's just a bunch of worms crawling around inside a costume, basically trying to pretend to be a human. And they're really unsettling. They're one of the most unsettling monsters that I have read in a fantasy book. You have the stone people, who are those ordinary humans cursed with the disease where they are slowly turning to stone. And, oh boy, like, the author could have literally written an entire book just about the stone men and the stone women, and I would have been 100% behind it, because it's just such an interesting analogy for lepers. It's such an interesting kind of idea to explore. I'm really jealous that I didn't come up with something similar to it. You also have multiple pantheons of gods who are all interacting, all granting magic powers to their saints on the planet in interesting ways. You also have the Ravelers, who are these nightmarish creatures who essentially are just kind of goop, and then they absorb people, and then they can, you know, pretend to be those people, and then they can keep absorbing more people, and they basically just, oh, it's really scary. There's this great bit in the book where essentially the first, I would say, third to maybe the two-thirds mark, there's like one Raveler loose in the city, and as a reader, I was thinking, holy cow, how are they going to kill this thing? This thing's such an insane monster. And then at the end of the book, like, hundreds of Ravelers are unleashed on the city, and you go, oh, okay, that's really scary. So that was done really well. Then there's also several different magic systems, the complex architecture of the city itself, and so many other elements in this book. So the point of kind of brain vomiting all the cool things that I remembered from this book into your earbuds is to consider this. Arguably, you could have taken one or two of these elements in isolation and still have written a really good story. But by combining all of these different elements, it made an amazing story. And I think that's so critical, that difference between a good story, which has maybe a couple of ideas explored in depth, and then an amazing story, which just has so many ideas brimming throughout it. And this is not a quantity beats quality game by any means, because there are plenty of books out there that just explore one idea in really fascinating depth, and there are plenty of books that have 50 cool ideas, but they don't have enough time for any of them. But it's worthwhile considering that if you think your novel may be lacking something, or if you just feel like you want to explore an extra aspect of it, more ideas is generally better than not having enough ideas. Number 6, layer it up. So layering up, what's that about? So particularly with architecture and cities, these are places that change and evolve over time. You just have to look at a city like London, which I've been lucky enough to visit, and I lived there on exchange for a couple of months. And it's a city with hundreds and hundreds of years of history, and you really feel that weight of all these different architectural styles when you walk through them. You feel like there's these layers in history, and you feel like you're just kind of a small part of the city's evolution over time. Because, you know, cities, these are places that change and evolve over time. And one of the main characters in the book, The Gutter Prayer, is actually a scholar who is constantly reminding us of this kind of architectural aspect of the city and how it changes over time. And this in itself is an interesting technique, because while I'm not saying that you need to have architects, archaeologists, or anthropologists as your main characters, there is an interesting correlation between these types of people who are curious about the past and the level to which you're given free rein as a writer to explore your world's mythos. Indiana Jones is a great example of this in movie form. And basically this point about layering it up is to consider that most places in the real world are never the same year on year. They change over time. The city of London in 16, 19 is probably, well, was probably vastly different to the city in 1719 as it was in 1819 and so on. Because I think a lot of the times, fantasy authors can fall into the trap of just leaving their world in this stagnant place where nothing really changes. It's just constantly stuck in this medieval period. But things change. And if you can consider how things change and how that may have affected the people in your story, that's going to create some really interesting settings. So you don't have to work out the complete history of everything in your book, but it may be something to consider if you want to add an extra dimension. Number 7, only 2 more to go. The city as a character. A very useful paradigm to consider. I'm going to share with you a passage from the book, because it exemplifies this point perfectly. Quote, "From here you see the heart of the old city, its palaces and churches and towers reaching up like the hands of a man drowning, trying to break free of the warren of alleyways and hovels that surrounds them." End quote. What makes this passage effective is personification. Personification is describing inanimate things by using human traits. So, such as the volcano was angry. It's not really a human thing, but it's described using emotions that are human. So while this technique is very clear to see in the micro application of this, such as this sentence that I shared with you, it's worthwhile to think about this in a more macro sense. What is the characterization of your city? What's the characterization of the different suburbs in that city? How are they different from each other? You've probably got places which are really rich and affluent. You've probably got places which are grimy, filled with factories. You've probably got places which are bustling with commerce. You've probably got places which are areas you would not want to go down at night because you probably get like shanked or something. And all of those different areas have their own characteristics. Cities are never monoliths. They're never the same from street to street. You can think about this in your own city. I'm sure that you can consider different places in the city as distinct from each other. You know, your downtown might be very different to, I don't know, the east side of your city or whatnot. And that's very useful to consider in fiction, because I think I've read a lot of fantasy books that have, you know, cities where it's sort of like, oh, this is the industrial city, and like, this is the silk-making city. And cities, while they may have a main identity, a main tone or flavor to them, there's going to be different pockets and different personalities throughout them. So just consider that when you're creating a city. Make sure that you avoid having it as a monolith, because that's probably a bit unrealistic. And I'm sure while you can get away with it, there may be decent explanations for it, such as, you know, it's a small city, so it's kind of not many people to create that level of, I suppose, diversity in tone. But generally, you want to consider how different areas in the city are different tonally. And that's something that we certainly see in the Gutter Prayer. So consider creating cities as characters, both in the micro level of using personification, and then in the macro level of considering what does it feel like on the whole, and how do the different suburbs and areas within it feel different from each other. And then lastly, number 8, it's all about the intertwining. For me, the most interesting parts of the Gutter Prayer are where these disparate elements of the world link, where they link and play with each other. For example, there's a scene where Spar the Stone Man touches a Raveler, and it infects the creature. The creature starts petrifying, suffering from the same disease that Spar the Stone Man is inflicted with. There's also this really strong interplay between different gods from different religions, and between the different magic systems used by various creatures. Everyone has their own tools, and the way they interfere with each other's makes things really interesting. The climax embodies this idea. Basically, at the end, you've got the several different aspects of the story's world, everything from the architecture to Spar the Stone Man to the various religions, all locking together, all completing this intricate puzzle to produce a wonderful resolution. So consider, don't just have all these cool elements that are random, but think about how you can join them together, how you can create interesting knots where they intersect and unravel each other and intertwine. Because that's where the real interesting parts of your story are going to be, the conflict between the different areas of your world. So overall, The Gutter Prayer has the best world building I've seen out of the 36 books I've read so far this year in 2019. And while the characters and the plot are equally phenomenal, and I could have easily done an episode about those, The Gutter Prayer is really a masterclass in embracing your story's world, exploring fascinating ideas, and producing something amazing. So that has been our episode on The Gutter Prayer. I hope you have really enjoyed it. And if you have enjoyed it, please stick around to let me tell you a bit about my own fantasy novel, which hopefully has some of the cool world-building aspects that I was just eulogizing about in today's episode. So Fires of the Dead, my debut fantasy novella, releases on September 20th, which is only a couple of days away from this episode if you're listening to it as it comes out. So it is about Wisp, who is a pyromancer, a magician who draws energy from fires to make his own flames. He's also a criminal, one job away from retirement, and it can't come bloody soon enough. Leading his misfit crew, Wisp ventures into a charred and barren forest to find a relic that could change the realm forever. But they aren't the only ones on the hunt, and the forest isn't as barren as it seems. Fires of the Dead is a dark fantasy novella with a unique magic system, perfect for anyone wanting a fast-paced read. Like I said, it releases on September 20th. There's a link to the book in the show notes below, and if you buy a copy within 7 days of the launch, you can email me a screenshot or the PDF of your purchase receipt, and I'm going to set you up with some exclusive launch bonuses. So these exclusive launch bonuses include chapter annotations. So for each chapter in the book, I wrote a short comment giving you kind of a behind-the-scenes look into what I was intending, my thoughts on the chapter, etc. And you can think of it like director's commentary, but for a book instead of a film. The second thing you'll get is a companion music playlist on Spotify. So I listened to a ton of music while writing Fires of the Dead, and I've crafted this playlist to reflect the songs that inspired the book. And they also make the perfect background for when you're reading the novella. And the last thing you'll get is a free prequel story. Taking place before Fires of the Dead, this story follows two of the main characters at a very different time in their lives. It's about a young magician who, desperate for respect, joins a criminal gang and becomes drunk on her newfound power. But when she must decide between everything she wants and everything she used to be, will she let the past die? Or will she reject her new life? So once again, these bonuses are only available if you buy the book between September 20th to September 27th, 2019. Once you have bought your copy, just email a screenshot of the receipt to jed.hern1@gmail.com. That's jed.hern1@gmail.com, and that email address, which is my personal email address, is in the show notes, so you can just use that. So then I will send you the bonuses. So once again, thank you so much for listening. Now go and write extraordinary stories. I'll see you next time.